right, here we go. Hour number three. And this is an interesting thing. I used to work in Las Vegas for, almost 3 years, close to it. And Las Vegas has turned into a very unusual city in many ways. It has no visible means of support, and yet it's got millions of people living in the area now. But I think, and I've said this for a long time, they're very smart about what they acquire, and that what they're about to acquire now is, they've got Major League Baseball, and other things are coming. It's becoming the complete city, if you think about it like that, the complete recreational city. It's all there. Football, baseball, golf, it doesn't matter. It's all there. I guess basketball is the only thing that Las Vegas doesn't have yet, but it's just a matter of time. The money will drive it there. So here's this little city of 2 or 3 million, which will have every major type of escapist entertainment fair you can imagine. It's all there. So as you watch Las Vegas, in a way you're mirroring the rest of the country, in almost absentia. It's a unique place. And Gary Holland has lived there for a number of years. And Gary's back with us tonight. Let's find out what's going on down there. How are you, Gary?
I'm doing good, Jeff. How's it going this evening?
It's moving right along, as they say. So you're getting all the major league sports. You've got them all except basketball, I guess.
Yeah, so the A's are going to be definitely moving here. They called a special session of the legislature. Lombardo did, to get this pushed through. It's going to be another $300 million of public aid this time.
lower
than when the Raiders...
Yeah. Sheriff Joe Lombardo, who is now, for those of you who don't know, Sheriff Lombardo, and we went through that whole Las Vegas massacre scene with Sheriff Lombardo, who is now the governor. So, funniest thing.
And on this program, we both predicted that he'd be governor. Matter of fact, if you look at how the election fraud that went through this state, the last two election cycles, 2022 was no exception. Democrats ran the board, except for governor. It's at this point it's comical.
It is.
It's comical. If anybody who can't recognize that it's not an election process, it's just a selection process, they're lost. They're never going to get it. What they say, they lay dollar short in their thinking. So,
right.
But the Oakland A's are going to be in here. They're going to be here, definitely. Matter of fact, Major League Baseball wants Las Vegas so bad that they're not even going to be charging a relocation fee. They charge other teams when they move. If they move to only Las Vegas, that's what they told the A's. The agreement with the Oakland A's is we won't charge you a relocation fee or a moving fee if you move to Las Vegas. You move anywhere else, we will. Las Vegas? No, we won't. So it's going to happen no matter what. And where it's going to be, if anyone's been to Las Vegas, they're going to tear down the Tropicana and they're going to build the stadium on the Tropicana. And by the way, the 91 festival where they had that
right next door
flag mass shooting. Well, that's, I think, going to be also part of the Oakland A's parking lot and stuff like that. So all that area is going to be...
Oh, the concert venue will be part of the stadium complex. Okay, I get it.
Probably, yeah. Obviously, I think it's going to be part of the parking lot, actually. And the stadium is going to be a 35,000 person stadium, and I think it's going to be it's not going to be fully domed. It's going to be a partial dome, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm going to be amazed to see is a day game in the middle of July. Good luck with that. But maybe it's going to be $1.5 billion stadium, so they might put some type of cooling system. The easiest way to do it is what they do at a lot of places here. We have a, as you know, we live in the desert. It's a very dry heat. So what they do at these outdoor restaurants and patios and stuff like that, they what they basically do is you have like a pipe, right, in front. And I don't know if you've seen these, Jeff, when you used to live here. And they take like a very fine mist of water and they blow it out, like high pressure. And it literally cools the area down really nice. Most people, a lot of people are houses here. If anyone's from listening right now that's in the desert southwest, a lot of houses, not every house, but a lot of the older houses, we use a system called a swamp cooler, which is evaporator coolers.
When I first went there, I had one in a house I was renting, and awful. I didn't like it.
Anyhow, yeah.
I know what a swamp cooler is. Most listeners do, too, if they're...
Yeah. If you do it right, for instance, my house, I only use a swamp cooler. Mm-hmm. And I have close to 3,000 square foot house. I have a really large capacity, which is, you know, they go by cubic feet, CFMs, right? So mine pushes up to like 6,000 square feet. I can cool down. 110 degree to 115 degree dry heat day inside my house is anywhere between 68 and 74 degrees.
Wow.
And it's all done with water. Yeah. It's just that you gotta ventilate it right. So unlike air conditioning, with a swamp cooler, you actually leave your windows halfway open. It pushes the hot air out, and basically what you're doing, you got to keep your air moving through your house. Mm-hmm. So the whole concept of it, a swamp cooler, is it sucks hot air through these wet pads, water, right? Pushes it through the house, cools the house down. You're basically humidifying your house, and you're cooling it down. But at the same time, what you do is you have vents, and you have you vent your house right. And it pushes the air back out. You want the air basically to be constantly being pushed out. Unlike central air conditioning, you want to keep the air in, the cold air in. Swamp coolers is kind of the opposite. You want to keep pushing the air out. You want to have good airflow through your house. So that's just a tip for anybody who plans on moving to the desert and have a swamp cooler. It does not work like an air conditioner. It's totally opposite. And if you do it right, it really works good. And I've been running swamp cooler my houses that I've lived in since I've lived here.
You're doing it right.
I've never.
Yeah. You know, you've got it figured out. You've got it clocked. That's good.
Yep.
Mine never worked.
Back to the stadium.
Right. It was awful.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, see, people get confused. They treat it as a central, like air conditioning.
Like it's HVAC. Not. It's not. Yeah. That's
exactly. And where you want to keep your windows closed, and you want to keep the cold air in, the swamp cooler is a little bit different. You want to keep having that air push out, so you can replace it with more cool, damp air. Mm-hmm. See, it's just it works good. Yeah, it does for me. It does anyway.
All right.
Yep. So, but the
very
stadium
good.
Will be at the Tropicana, Jeff. Here's the problem: the outfield, right, is going to be facing west, right, and you're going to have in the background, New York, part of Excalibur, let's see, what other casino, the Luxor. It'll be like that area right there. If anyone's been to Las Vegas, you go to Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard. The stadium's going to be on the southeast side of the where Tropicana is. But the outfield's going to be facing northwest, which is basically the northwest, and they're going to have basically the strip view. The only problem I have with that is that if you have, say, a game that starts at, say, 6:30, 7 o'clock, there's the sun's still out, and it sets in the west. So
yeah,
you're going to have that hot,
glare.
Beating sun. Yes, you have glare.
I mean, if you're a batter,
yep.
You're looking right at that sunset, that glare is coming in, and you won't be able to see the pitch as well, maybe.
Exactly. No, you won't. And that's what I'm saying. So it's going to be... That's where you're going to have that sun glare. But like I said, I'm just more amazed to see how the cooling system is going to be. They're going to use water mist. probably that's where they'll end up. I think that if I was to guess how they're going to keep the stadium seats and the sections cool, the ones that are basically the general seating, I'm assuming that's what they're going to use, is some type of water system.
A misting
system. And then they'll keep it cool. But it's very smart where they're putting it. The other spot that we're going to put it, where the old Wild West was, on the other side of Tropicana, on the other side of the 15 freeway, that's a ghetto area. Nothing but hookers, drug addicts, thieves. It just would have been a nightmare to have it on that side. I understand.
They're putting it right now. Right in a blue-chip location, really. Couldn't be much better. Well, I hope
The ownership of the Tropicana is getting some type of, I think, ownership role in the A's or some type of considerations, because they gave them 90 acres for a dollar or something. Like, there's like part of it where they're giving them some acreage, which is they lowered it down to a very low price so they could get the deal approved. That was what I read. It's a smart move if we last that long. You know, that's a big if. So they're talking 27 or 28, the stadium will be done. I think the 27 opening day is when they're going to have the new stadium. Right now,
so
the Oakland A's are drawing maybe.
Where are they going to play in the
meantime?
They're
going to play Aviator Stadium in Summerlin. That's their minor league team they have. They have a Triple A minor league team here, which is the Las Vegas Aviators. They used to be called the Las Vegas 51s. They built a brand new stadium, Hughes Corporation did, up in Summerlin, which is I've been through that, but I've explained what Summerlin is. It's not a real city. It's an HOA community. But they moved it to Summerlin. They have I think right now they have a 12,000 to 15,000 seat capacity in that stadium. But they said they could add at least go up to 20,000 seats. And so temporarily the Oakland A's and their minor league team are going to be sharing that stadium. It's a really nice stadium, though. It's a very beautiful stadium. They did a really good job on that stadium
So they'll be there when, Gary? When are they going to make the move?
Well, they have one more. I can't see them, actually, to be honest with you. Once they get approval for the move, I can't see Oakland staying past this season in Oakland. They're only drawing 3,000 and 4,000 people at a game. They're not drawing many people. You know, it's the end of the line. The people in the Bay Area know it's over. The fan base is, I don't know if they're just protesting, just don't want to go to the games. I don't know, but when you're drawing 3,000 and 4,000 people to a Major League Baseball game, that's not even like single A minor league games or draw more people. So they're not going to have any problems temporarily using Aviator Stadium, because they'll sell out 20,000 at a time. They will have no problem. During spring training, Jeff, they have major league weekends here where they have spring training games, and they sell out every game. Every game. So they're not going to have a problem selling the games out. Even though it's out in Summerlin, it's out near Red Rock Canyon, that's where the new stadium is. It's like that far out. But you still will get enough people. There'll be more than enough people. Because, look, right across the street from the stadium is Red Rock Casino. So, and that's a very big resort. So it's a resort casino. And they got a lot of local resort casinos up in that area of town. So they're not going to have a problem drawing people out that way until the stadium is built.
Got it.
I don't see it happening.
The summation of all this is that Las Vegas is a major league sports town, and they'll get an NBA team. What's your call on the NBA team?
Well, LeBron James has been pushing to be part of in a partnership with. I want to say it's LeBron James, and I've heard Magic Johnson's name mentioned. Mm-hmm. So we're talking like players, and you know, of course, they're not going to be coming up with the money. We already know the usual suspects will be coming up with the money for it. So, but there'll be an NBA team in here for the next two to five years.
Right.
They already got the arena. The Golden Knights are in the Stanley Cup Finals, and they're already up two games already. So, you know. If they stick to how they've been playing, probably they're going to win this. They're going to win the NHL. They're going to win the Stanley Cup this year. It'll be the first time that, well, they had women's WNBA team win the champion last year, but that's like, you know,
right? People, I got it.
Well, yeah, there's nobody like really knocking down doors to go to women NBA games. They're just not. So,
no.
So. It'll be actually the first major league championship in this town. They have a major hockey following in this town, which is kind of shocking when you think about it. But they sell every game out. Matter of fact, the Golden Knights have, since they started, the Las Vegas Golden Knights had the best attendance record in the NHL out of every team since the beginning of the Golden Knights.
That's a shocker.
You know, years ago, Jeff, I was at a radio station working here in town, and I used to do, I was the executive producer for Las Vegas Wranglers hockey. And that was a minor league team. And Las Vegas Wranglers would be considered double A in baseball. It wasn't like the top tier minor league team, right? They were very small, you know, in a very small league. It was basically double A hockey, and they used to do 10,000-11,000 people a night until they lost their arena deal, and they used to draw. Before that, years ago, they had a team called the Las Vegas Thunder, and that was like triple A hockey at the time, and they used to have 12,000-15,000 people a night at Thomas and Mack Center when they used to have the Thunder here. So they've always been done good with hockey. I guess the mixture of people, there's a lot of Midwesterners here, and so they just have a really big hockey following. Matter of fact, Jeff, right now we have an NHL team here, and we have a AAA minor league hockey team for the Golden Knights, plays in Henderson. So there's two professional hockey teams in this town. And they do really good. I guess they built a new arena over in Henderson for the minor league team. So they sell out too all the time since they started.
Well, you never figured.
Yeah, they've got a lot of teams here. I'm surprised, but you cannot get a Golden Knights ticket. You can if you want to pay a premium price. Guy just went to the game just the other night. He told me he went to the playoff game, and he paid $1,500 for one ticket.
One ticket. Wow. Well, here's the story. Well, why we're talking about Las Vegas is most American cities are dying. We know that. That they're being taken down by international communist Bolsheviks. We know who the players are. And they're full of homeless, full of crime, drugs. Las Vegas is very close to becoming a full major league sports center, a city that is not dying like most other cities are. It's a different kind of a place entirely. It's as odd. Las Vegas is very unusual. No other city like it in the world. What does it make its living on? Allegedly tourism and gaming, but other than that, there's nothing else there. No big industry, no big business, no manufacturing base. It's just an odd place, and yet it's surviving.
It is,
and they will get their NBA team. You're right.
Oh, they will, and so they're counting on more of tourists to play, go to these games. I'll give you an example. Most Raiders games, a lot of times, have more of the opposing team's fans than the Raiders fans.
Oh, that's unusual.
Well, because even the owner of the team, Mark Davis, was complaining that there was so many other teams' fans. Sometimes it was like the other team's home game and not the Raiders. And so the only team that's drawing a local crowd is the Golden Knights. I don't know how the A's are going to play out, but I think it's going to be more tourist-driven. One thing, Jeff, is look, around town, if you want to know what how the local economy is doing, you don't go to the Strip because that's all tourism. You want to look at the local casinos, what they're doing here, and they're not doing as good as the Strip. Matter of fact, you go to any local casino here, they're running in the look. It's half empty, three quarters empty. I'm talking on Friday and Saturday nights when they used to be filled to the rafters, and it's just not that way anymore. You got people not max betting and on machines. You know, machines they need turnover, right? That is the biggest profit maker for any casino is the machines. But when you have people betting 5 cents a hand, 10 cents a hand, you know, it's taken sometimes 15, 20 minutes to draw, maybe get $20 out of the person.
That's crazy.
They need people to max bet. And I mean, but what I mean by max bet, $3 to $5 a hand per spin. Then they're not, and that's not happening anymore. And I haven't seen that in a while, Jeff. You used to see that, like, you would go 15 years ago into any local casino here in town. I'm talking video poker bars, minor, small, just local casinos, even up to the major size local casinos. You go in there, three quarters to almost 100% of the machines filled, and I'm talking everybody max betting. You came and go to any video poker establishment, and you're lucky to find maybe two or three people in there. A lot of bars are going out of business because you see a lot of that. A lot of restaurants are folding. There's two economies here. There's the Strip economy, and then there's the rest of the town.
All right, hold on, Gary. One second. I got to pause. We'll come right back. Very interesting inside look at Las Vegas, which is known all around the world, and it's fighting through the same morass of decay that many big cities are fighting through and losing. Hold on a minute. Okay, and welcome back. Talking with Gary Holland in Las Vegas, just to take a look at the world's most unusual city and how it's trying to fight its way through these times. And it's doing okay. Once it gets that NBA franchise, if there isn't a thermonuclear war to ruin it all, Las Vegas will be a year-round major league city, period. It's too bad that Las Vegas didn't put in a true high-speed train 25 years ago when they were talking about it first. They should have done that. They'd have it now. They're going to put one in, but its terminus is going to be in the Apple Valley, which is stupid for a number of reasons. So I don't know what the status on that is, but the big story here is how does a city survive? And it does it, by and large, with major league sports franchises, interestingly enough, which have replaced traditional manufacturing. Think of the Rust Belt now and Detroit, Michigan, and how we used to build all the ancillary industries that were affiliated to the car manufacturing business. We don't have any of that. It's all gone. What do we have now? We have escapist entertainment. Major League Sports. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, so for instance, you look at the local economy right now. The local economy is a mixed bag. They still haven't. There's still a lot of people. Well, they probably moved on by now, moved out of town, or moved to some type of other field. But they still had like 80,000 people that were laid off. That were food service workers and different service workers in the casinos who were never hired back. They had furloughed, and they were done. They were never called back in. you have, there's still, well, they tore down three local casinos that they never reopened. There's another casino on Boulder Highway, which was a local casino that never reopened. And it's still standing there with empty. It's just since
what's going to happen with these?
From March of 2020.
They're going to tear them down eventually?
Well, they tore three of them down, and this one's a different ownership. It's owned by Boyd Gaming, and they're not doing anything with it. It's just sits empty. I don't know if they're planning on selling it. It was a pretty new. It's called Eastside Cannery. It wasn't that old of a casino, by the way. It wasn't that many. It hadn't been open for terribly long, too long. It was maybe like 8 years. I think it was 6 to 8 years. So it hadn't been that long. And so when they shut everything down, it never recovered, and they just never reopened it. So, you know, it's like anything. Once we go into the total full depression that we're going into a depression, it's not going to be a recession. It's going to be a depression. I don't know how this town will survive, even with Major League Sports, because when people's disposable income dries up, and they're just worried if they're going to keep their job, and especially like in a very serious downturn, you know, people aren't going to want to go jump on a jet, or an airline to go fly out to Las Vegas to spend insane amounts of money on fees and parking fees and that fee and this fee. You know, the amount of fees they're charging now, Jeff, to get a room, resort fee, service fee. Like there's like three or four fees they charge now. Then the county puts their tax in. The state has a tax. It's like if you go to get a $50 room, you actually go out spending like $120 a night, $70 in just fees and taxes. And a lot of people just can't afford that. I don't care who you are, you know.
What are they going to do to reverse this downtrend and try and bring more people in? How are they going to do that? With Major League Sports? Is somebody with a great revolutionary idea lurking in the shadows somewhere that's going to come up with something? A whole new approach to bring people into Las Vegas?
I mean, they could try to siphon off some of the factories and businesses that are running out of California.
Right.
But they really haven't capitalized that much on that. You know, some stuff up in Reno, the Reno area has been getting a few things. Some warehouses and stuff here, but again, that's all tied to service economy. There's not no much manufacturing here at all. There's a few small little companies, but they're not no big players in anything. And so, like I said, I don't, if there is a major, look, this town's economy is based on people having leisure money, having this disposable income.
Right.
The amount of people who have leisure income and disposable income is starting to fall. Quickly.
Oh, it's diminishing, yeah. So I'm thinking a whole new revolutionary idea. How are they going to do it? Free, okay. My idea, dumb maybe it was to have free air transit from all over the country, maybe 20 different cities, big cities, to Las Vegas. Free air transit. They're going to get them once they get to town. But has that ever been talked about? Free transportation to get there?
I never heard of that, no, and I don't know who they might be able to. Well, they have a Legionnaire, which is based here. So you'd have to have, like, an airline. You'd have to work out a deal with an airline.
It would have to be a Las Vegas airline. They'd have to have their own.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, they do technically do right now. It's a Legionnaire. Legionnaire is based in Las Vegas. They fly back east, and they fly to, like, Southern California, and there's a few other cities they fly to. It's a discount airline. But free, no. I mean, and they might be able to do some charter flights. The other problem they're having, Jeff,
$50, so, $50.
See, the other problem they're having is they're European and Chinese. Tourism hasn't came back here. It just hasn't. You used to see, like, Chinese tour buses all over the place, and you just don't see that anymore.
Uh-huh.
Like, Chinese tourism was very big here. Asian tourism was really huge here before the scandemic, right? So it was in European visitation. A lot of people from Europe used to come here. And now it's just not as much as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so they also, there was a report that came out last month that March and April has really started cooling down here, convention-wise and gaming-wise. They're still claiming they're making record profits, but I don't know if that has to do with gaming. I think it sounds to me like they're doing some shifting in the books to show profit. But their debt loads.
All right. We got Dubai. All right. Look at Dubai. Is there any big money coming into Las Vegas that you're hearing about?
Not that I noticed. Like, they finished the last of the mega resorts that they're going to build on the Strip for now. I don't know if there's any plans. I know because the last mega resort that just opened in the past year was Resort World. And I've talked to people where they said they're not drawing what they thought they were going to draw to Resort World.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you can go on a busy weekend,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see people in the casinos, Jeff, but are they spending? Foot traffic is one thing.
They need to get bodies there, Gary. That's my take. $50 a plane flight.
They need to
get
bodies, but the problem is they get the bodies, Jeff. You rent a car. Like, for instance, you rent a car. Say the car is $30 a day. By the time you're done paying all the fees, the taxes, the stadium tax, this tax, that tax, that $30 car turns into like $80 a day. You go stay at any Strip casino, you have to pay for parking now. There's some charging even to use, like, basic amenities.
I don't think that's smart.
Like, if you want your room cleaned now, you have to pay a fee for your room to be cleaned.
Oh, my. Whoops.
Yes, they're charging. They're charging a hospitality fee. They're charging what they call a resort fee. Like, what's a resort fee? Well, they said they give an explanation as well. To use you rent a room. There's an on-site, say a gym, the swimming pool, the amenities, and like the hallways keeping clean or whatever. That's what the resort fee covers. The resort fee, Jeff, is sometimes more than the room itself price. Like, you can get a room for, like, say, $29 a night. Your resort fee is $35 a night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, so...
And they're feeing people to death. The tourists here are paying, Jeff,
throats.
I'd say. Yes. And they have to, because gaming, they don't have the revenue on the slots anymore. Going to any local casino here in town, Jeff, the average age is my age and above. They don't have the Gen Zers are too wrapped up in their narcissism to do anything. They stay home and just constantly sit on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have a generation, Jeff, by the way, I know I'm going off topic here a little bit. Gen Z should be actually called Gen Narcissist. They are the most narcissistic generation that's in the history of this planet.
Mm-hmm.
You
can argue that.
Psychopathic narcissist, and how do you know this? Look at all them videos. You can look at any video online, Jeff, any social media video, where a teacher's getting punched in the face by a student,
mm-hmm.
or being beat down in the hallway, or not even just in the schools. out in public. Teenagers jump, they group and they jump on a person, they beat the crap out of them.
Yeah.
Everyone filming that video, by the way, Jeff, is laughing. That is psychopathic behavior. That's not normal behavior.
That's a very good point.
There's not one person, Jeff, in them videos standing up saying, this is wrong. Why are you doing that? Stop what you're doing. They're all laughing and going, woo! And they're laughing and having fun. And they're treating it as a joke.
That's Gen Z.
That is Gen Z in a nutshell. That is narcissistic. That is at the level of Ted Bundy behavior. That is serial killer behavior. And I'm not saying they're serial killers, but the mentality and the attitude is the same. No empathy. None. Zero empathy. They have no feelings for anyone. Only time they have, if they have some type of weird empathy, it's self-righteousness, which is the form of narcissism. These people don't, these younger people, I don't, man, I am so, you know, if we even have a future, but if there's any type of, if we're counting on that, this generation to care, move this country forward, that's not going to happen.
No.
People are in for a very, very shocking future with this generation.
No, you're correct. The Gen Z generation is the last generation. What their children, if they have any, will be like the next generation will be unrecognizable. They will grow up in a complete digital world of media distraction, media brainwashing. They will be on social media, if at all. The AI by then will be so intriguing that they're going to be completely disarmed, most of them. They won't do anything. They just won't.
Oh, no.
So this is the last stand. Go ahead.
Look, as a population in this country, we've died. And how I know this, go to the border. I'm getting reports. I'm talking to people I know. They're saying that it's a constant flow. It's like a mass flow of people just flooding into the country. No one's stopping them. There's zero resistance at this point, Jeff. Nobody's stopping them. Border Patrol is just there for processing now. They're not there to stop anybody. The amount of people coming into this border is beyond belief. And a lot of these Johnny-come-latelys that you hear on alt radio claiming to be like, you know, the hero of the illegal invader movement, they're 20 years too late. I really hate to break the news to people. The time to do something was in 2005. The latest was 06 and 07. And you know, Jeff, and I'm not saying this to be a defeatist, but I have been involved in the illegal invader movement since getting signatures for Prop 187. Me and my wife went into the city of Compton, South Central Los Angeles at the time, and we got signatures for Prop 187. That was the last hope the state of California, and matter of fact, the United States had to make
So goes the rest. Prop 187, for you who may not know, was the California American community, not patriot community, but liberals, conservatives, they all came up together and signed an initiative. And the initiative, well, tell them what it was, because you worked on it.
Prop 187 basically said, if you're an invader in this country, you have no right to any public anything, public schools, public education, public services, any social service or public services, you were not allowed to have access to. And that was it. And it was constitutionally sound. There was no way that if it went up to the Supreme Court, that would have lost. Prop 187 went in front of a local Zionist judge named Marianne Fauser, who was in Long Beach. And she put an injunction against it. Yeah. At the time, we still had Pete Wilson and Dan Lundgren.
Yep.
Exactly. Dan Lundgren was going to carry it through. Unfortunately, they lost. The Republicans lost control of California at that point. The last governor we had was Pete Wilson, who was a Republican governor in California. That was it after that. Dan Lundgren ran, and he lost. They got Gray Davis. And when Gray Davis got in, the first thing he did was vacate the appeal for Prop 187. Prop 187 just passed 5-1. It was the only time in California where they had Democrats, like you said, any type of affiliation. It passed by, it was a 70-80% pass.
Yeah.
When they voted on Prop 187. It went through with flying colors. And it should never, ever have been vacated. But when you had the communists and the Zionists that went full control in the state of California, when it went full communism, that's what happened. We were involved with Prop 209. Prop 209 was shelved, was messed with, and then it lost. Because Prop 209, there was election fraud involved that. Prop 209, by the way, for most people, was an updated version of Prop 187.
Right.
What they did is they rewrote Prop 209 to reflect all the concerns that the federal judge had raised in the Prop 187 case. And it made to the ballot. And again, it was through election fraud that Prop 209 went down in defeat.
Right. Well, that,
but there's no
right
way
then,
you're telling me that Prop 187, Jeff, a few years before that, passed that good, and then 209 didn't pass at all.
I remember 187, and I said to myself, if this is somehow overthrown or subverted, it's the end. That is the end. That's going to tell us where we're being taken, and they did it. And I said, that's it. That's done. The will of the people no longer mattered at all. It was an international power base that was running the show. We're being invaded now with intent. Don't forget that. This is all intent. All of it.
Oh, sure.
Every bit of it.
We're being... Jeff, you remember in the mid-early 2000s when, like I said, that was the last time...
You're right.
...that we actually had a chance to do something. Past 2007, it's died since. There's nothing... Look what's going on now. You just got to see what's going on. Would you open your eyes to see that has been a lost cause? You're not going to stop it. They don't care what anyone has to say. And they know that no one cares. Because you know what, Jeff? If we really cared, we would have had more people in the Minuteman Project in the early 2000s when they were telling us terrorists were the boogeyman. Remember the boogeyman? Muslim terrorists were going to all get us, and we had to go and invade countries that had nothing to do with anything. But yet, everybody in this country was allowing themselves to be molested at airports. Even to this day, they are. They're being the Patriot Act made them serfs in their own country. All the things the government did to their citizenry, but yet our border at the time when we were fighting supposedly two righteous wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to fight the terrorists, our whole southern border was open with Swiss cheese. There was no resistance at the border. That was the government's way of letting you know that they were lying to you the whole time. I mean, if you want to know a tell, actions always speak louder than words. If any idiot out there believes that Afghanistan and Iraq, and I'm not talking about the audience here, Jeff, in this program. I'm talking other audiences. Believe that Iraq and Afghanistan was needed,
right.
But yet at the same time, their border was wide open and they did nothing about it, Jeff. Nothing. Matter of fact, you had citizens in this country would attack us mercilessly about being either you're a Minuteman Project at the time, or you're a terrorist, or you're a white supremacist. But it was like various races in the Minuteman Project and all the different organizations that I was involved with over the years. They had different races. Look, one of the chief people that was speaking out against the illegal invader movement for a very long time was a guy named Terry Anderson, a black man from South Central Los Angeles, who was a very good friend of mine and who has passed away since. But
he was good. Really good. All right, we got to wrap it up.
He tried to warn people.
He did. Yep. Terry Anderson deserves a lot of credit and recognition, even though he's gone. He was a very brave man. He was an American, great American, and that's the truth. Gary, thanks for the walk through and look around Las Vegas. It's a most unusual city, and I think we know a lot more about it now. Thanks for that. We'll talk soon. Thank you.
Yep, good evening, Jeff. Thank you.
Okay, all right. All right, Gary Holland and the view from Las Vegas. Okay, back tomorrow, Thursday. Thanks for being here. Be careful out there. Be safer. Talk tomorrow.